die. What lies beyond and what lay before? Is anything certain in life? They say life is too short, the here and the now, and you're only given one shot.
We all go through things, and we all heal in our own way, but we're never alone. Here's your host, Crazy Gene.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Insights Radio. Actually have a super guest with me tonight, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about this guy. He really doesn't need an intro. But, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show, and sometimes I think we go through things in life that really enlighten us and set us on that path that we're supposed to be on. Sometimes we question that path when we go through certain things or, you know, just dealing with day-to-day issues. Chris certainly has been through his share of ups and downs, and I'm thrilled to have Chris DeCesare on my show tonight. Chris, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks very much, Craig.
Well, one of the things, Chris, that I found kind of interesting, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, your childhood. And, you know, the information that I read today pretty much points to where you didn't really have maybe a strong belief in the paranormal until you started to live some of the paranormal stuff.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. In fact, when I was about 5 years old, and this shows you how frail my psyche was at the time, I saw an episode of The Munsters, you know, with Grandpa and Herman, and I was so scared that evening I thought I saw Herman Munster's hand coming to get me. My mom would say, no, it's okay. So from the very beginning, I wasn't really, I don't think in my mind cut out for the paranormal or things about ghosts or scary things. So I kind of tuned it out. And in my mind, what the spirit was that I would allow in was the concept of maybe heaven or angels in an abstract sense, like when you read the Bible or look at some prayers. So it was a way in which you could, you know, look at the world in a nicer way, but I didn't necessarily invest in the fact it might be interactive with people.
Mm-hmm. Chris, let's talk about that a little bit, because, you know, one of the things that I grew up in was a strong Lutheran family, and I mean, there was no excuse for not going to church on Sunday. And as I got a little bit older, you know, I spent my time, I grew up in a small little Midwest city, and, you know, I partied with the best of them on Friday and Saturday nights. And one of the things that I noticed was, you know, a lot of the people that sat in the front pew and wore their fancy three-piece suits, you know, were in the bar on Saturday nights with me. You know, and I don't know, I kind of got that sense of phoniness, and I went from that feeling of, you know, if you didn't do certain things in life, you were destined for hell. And I don't know, call it rebelling or whatever, but, you know, there was a point where I walked away from the church. And even today, you know, I say I'm not a religious person, but I consider myself to be spiritual. Where do you fall in that at?
Well, I remember as a kid being very dismayed. I used to get up in the morning on Saturday, at 6 in the morning, I watched the test pattern go into the Star Spangled Banner and then go into the morning news. I used to sit there and eat peanut butter by the heating vent, you know, and it was around the time of Watergate and the Vietnam War, and just things seemed so negative and so sad in the world, and I'd wait for the Pink Panther to come on or some cartoon like that. But I remember going to church, and I went to a Catholic church called Sacred Heart, and they had this a beautiful array of stained glass windows around the entire base of the church. And as you sat in Mass and the sun would move, it would light different saints' faces up across the windows. And I thought, that's interesting that every day I read in the paper about death or violence or war or deceit, there are these people on these walls who are remembered for something good they did. And I wondered, how do you do that? And so I went to church mostly to reflect upon the world. And I knew all the prayers, and I went with my family every week. But I liked being in the church itself because it made me think about what you would have to do to be that good. And so unlike most people, I wasn't out and doing the partying thing. I was trying to run and make the Olympic team and be a good kid. So I was a little strange in that regard. And I think because of that, and even though, you know, as you get older, you develop your own ideas, sometimes it challenges the way in which you're brought up in terms of your faith or upbringing or morals. I still place value in a lot of different religions, especially early on, in that most of them preach, on the surface at least, at the base values of being kind and decent, loving. And so I try to look past the foibles of humanity and look at the basis for the religion or faith, which is supposed to be the idea of being a brotherhood and sharing love and kindness.
Definitely. And, you know, that's the one thing that I think that we lack in society today is we've gotten into that point where we don't really care about other people so much. It's all about me. And I think we need to turn that M around and make it we, and we would be in a lot better place than we are. That's my little off the wall thing for the night.
I think it's a great thing. And I'm a school teacher, and I work with students every day, and I explain to them, you know, that it's not just about you when you graduate. It's about you and the people around you, the people that you impact. It could be a customer or a coworker. It could be your boss. And in the end, you know, you have an obligation to yourself to be honest and decent and work your hardest, because that makes people around you, in many cases, rise to the level you're at. And so you're right about the me to the we. You know, but I do think it starts, though, with a dedication to something that you believe in, whether it's your marriage or your friends or belief system, your health. It's nice to have something you can focus on. And back when I was a teenager, I focused primarily on my running. And that was a team effort, too, between my father helping me and my coach and your teammates. And you realize early on that a shared victory in the end has a more lasting impact than a solo victory, you know?
Yep. Chris, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that happened in the mid-80s and the start of school and the discovery of the paranormal.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes you look back and you say to yourself, the good old days. I think that our human psyche tends to look back at events, mostly the positive ones. We don't like to dwell on the negative. And so I can tell you, looking back at the 80s when I was growing up, the world seemed like just a wonderful place to me. You know, we had a thriving economy. The Olympics were being held in Los Angeles. And I just love the Olympics, obviously. You know, I was in good health. I was going to college. I was young. I was meeting people. So for me, it was a glorious time. And I wasn't necessarily searching for any kind of meaning. I was just looking for experience to see, you know, what's out there. And I remember at the time, a very popular movie was Ghostbusters, you know, and then the song too, you know, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. And just like anything, you know, after a while, you hear something on the radio 55 times in one day, you think, I've had enough of that. By the time I get to college, you know, for the 1984 school year, I was so tired of the movie and the song and I remember going into the college suite and seeing that our theme for that year was Ghostbusters. I thought, oh my gosh, I mean, the Doors, the ghost. I'm like, please, people, come on. And the enduring memory of that for me was, and the movie was, the idea of like that Michelin man, that donut creature at the end. I'm like, would you stop that? So ironically, at a time where people are like looking at this as a possibility, gee, are there ghosts? You know, can that happen? I was just thinking, oh please, I don't want anything to do with that. And that's what was ironic to me at the time, is looking back, is that, oh my gosh, I was in the exact wrong place to, you know, be expecting this to happen to me.
Mm-hmm. Chris, how, you know, just in reflecting back a little bit, I mean, and I know hindsight's 2020, but living in that and I think of it as maybe being wearing, and you get to a point where you just, I don't know, you just want to throw the towel in. You've had enough's enough. Did you get to that point with this?
With the haunting itself or the 80s? Haunting? Yeah. I didn't want the haunting to happen. I didn't want to believe it was happening. And every day for those 10 weeks, my number one goal is to make it stop. And I know that a lot of people that I meet a lot of nice people now when I go to certain events. And like, for example, John Tobin has some great events, you know. And I meet the most wonderful people. Every once in a while, someone will say to me, gee, I wish I could see what you saw back then. And I know it's because it sounds interesting, as, you know, in middle ages is. But I look at them and I say, honestly, I'm like, are you sure you want that? Because having been through and going through it, it wasn't quite as fun as you might think it is. Because if it's on the movie screen or if it's being told to you, you know, secondhand in a sense, you can experience some of the visuals perhaps or some of the sounds. You can try to interpret them in your own mind. But when you're in that spot and the room is dark and you're freezing cold and something is looking over you and they're breathing your air and you don't know if you're going to live or escape from that thing, it's different. And so I understand the dichotomy between wanting to learn about things, explore the unknown. At the same time, I have the feeling of, gee, I don't know if you really want to have to do that. And so I think that's my best answer for you, is that I guess every person's unique. For me, I didn't want it to happen. I tried to make it stop. But sometimes life is like that. Sometimes life gives you something you can't stop. And then you have to look to yourself and say, how do I deal with that?
Chris, and I don't want to dwell on this, because I think that there's a lot of wonderful things that we can talk about this evening other than just this. But just to get an understanding for everybody that's out there, being in that position, and I mean, what did you do to try to make it stop? And what finally made you decide to leave?
Well, I can tell you that you know, each of us is shaped by our environment. We all have potential in ourselves in terms of our height or our eye color or certain tendencies, but the environment really allows us to maximize or not those potentials. And I ran. I was a runner. And I learned in the progress or the course of competing in many, many events, from the mile to the marathon, that you had to stay calm when you're competing. Once you got nervous and your body tightened up, you couldn't perform as normally would. And I'll give the example of like free throws in basketball. A lot of people I know can go to a gym and make free throw after free throw after free throw like they're unconscious. But put them in a game with people yelling and screaming, their muscles tighten up, and it's a brick or it's an air ball, you know. And so I learned early on you had to stay calm and try to problem solve during the event itself. And so once myself and my roommate and people in the building realized something was going on that was not the average thing, it defied science to my mind, I began to try to isolate things as to what we were seeing and what it meant. And I owe a lot of that to Jeff Unger, who lived next door to me. You know, he began to write down in a journal everything that was going on. That allowed us to reflect and look back at what's happening and see, well, what do we do now? And in the end, though, you know, you take the facts you gather, whether they be observations or someone's opinion or guesses, and you try to make a game plan. And the game plan should direct you toward a goal. My goal was to survive. Not necessarily to get out of that room or get out of college, because at the same time, you know, my dad was the first person in my family to go to college. I don't want to be the first person to fail out of college in my family. And so I was determined to stay as long as I could, but make this thing go away. And then, you know, it got to a point where, you know, I was attacked physically. You know, some of my friends were being, you know, harassed and frightened and affected in a physical manner too, where I said to myself, you know what, I have to do something. I have to face this thing. And if I don't, I'm not going to forgive myself, and who knows who will get hurt. So, you know, it's the idea again of not being by myself, about others. You know, if I just thought about myself, I would have probably upped and left. But my dad's opinion of me meant something to me. my friendships meant something to me. And then the idea of wanting to help people around me meant something to me. And I think, you know, that helped me navigate those waters.
Chris, life's changed a lot for you in the last few years. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I have a feeling that at some point, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, that things kind of leveled out a little bit for you and life got kind of comfortable. And I've seen what it's like when you come into the chat rooms. I was a little bit PO'd the first time you popped in the chat room over here, because you came in to listen some tunes, and it was like, look, Chris is here. Let's ask him 500 questions.
I remember that, yes. You know, you're right. I came to listen to tunes, and it was, you play great music on the show. But, you know, that's one thing I realized. You know, it was in my mind for the longest time, for a quarter century, the worst time of my life. I realized, though, once I stepped out for the first time, we were in the process of talking about the film, Please Talk With Me. Mm-hmm. This is before any TV shows came about or anything like that. I just went back to Geneseo with Jeff to talk to people who were there, the students, about what happened to me at that location. And I was scared. And afterwards, people came up to me and said, that's an amazing thing. Thank you for sharing that. You made me feel better about myself, and you were so brave, and I admire you. I thought, that's really strange. You know, that's a really strange thing, because, you know, sometimes you yourself, you're your worst critic, your harshest critic. And I never realized, looking back objectively, that I did something well. I got through all that. And you're right. It's been a very healing process. But there was no guarantee it would be. You know, with the first couple steps out there, I was brought back my mind to the ridicule I would have suffered back in the 80s. You know, what are you doing? Drugs? Are you insane? Or you can't say those things. You'll never get a job. And now it's so different, and that there's more exposure to these concepts. And it's almost like the rage now is to go out and look for something in the paranormal realm. So it's been a very healing, wonderful, wonderful thing for me. And I feel blessed that the people who I met early on in this process of sharing the story have been kind and decent and friendly, and it gave me a new appreciation for my own life.
That's great, man. And I'm gonna throw this out there. Some of the people that you surround yourself with, you know, and the one that pops into the top of my list there is Reverend Tim. Good mm-hmm. people, and I'm glad that you fell into those realms and not Fox. Or you yes. know what I'm saying? Because let's talk a little bit about why the book and why eventually the film.
Sure. You know, I mentioned just a few moments ago, and your question is just right in the mark, because the first person that approached me after I spoke for the very first time, July 9th, 2011, was Reverend Tim Shaw. He had just gotten out of the hospital. He had surgery. He wasn't fully recovered. He couldn't drive yet. And he had heard about this haunting at Geneseo for 20 years and could never get any place in terms of his research. And when he heard that people were saying they were involved in it, he just really almost jeopardized his health to be there. And at the end, he said, look, I love talking to you. You know, so that was a great healing moment for me. And when it came time to say, gee, you know, maybe there should be some kind of written document about these things. We had the journal notes. That's a day-by-day account that was contemporary, but no reflective piece looking back at those events. And, you know, Reverend Tim Shaw, you know, I just thought that's a great, great thing if he would do that, because he was the one that gave me the bridge out to the public world of safety. And, you know, I listened to his show, The Black Cat Lounge. I love his show. And he really is. He reminds me of a mixture of like your favorite uncle mm-hmm. and a carnival barker. I just love it. He's everything that you as a young person, you'd admire in somebody, where they're a free spirit and they're intelligent. And I love the guy. So I was very happy that, you know, he offered to write that. And I've been surrounded by great people, you know, ever since. And like I said, I could probably name 50 people right now who've been so kind and so decent. And I don't even know if I deserve that half the time, but I really appreciate their kindness to me and the level of respect they provide me, you know.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I have to say, Chris, and, You know, at the end of the day, when we lay our heads down on the pillow, and I said this one night in the chat room, and I think you were in there, and we were talking a little bit about some things. You know, it's, and everybody gets so concerned about, you know, that being Mr. Popular, and, oh, you know, I want to be surrounded by all these people, and I want this and I want that, and we get so disappointed on some of the silliest things in life. But at the end of the day, and I look at it like this, if I can change one person's life or open one person's eyes to some things, I've done my job.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, you're out there in the platform where you're able to do that because, you know, the paranormal field, and some people would argue this point, but I don't think very many. I think everybody, and we'll never get along. I mean, not everybody's going to see eye to eye on things, but I think we need to just get to a point where we can agree to disagree and try to get along. We're all looking at the same thing.
Yeah, if you take a look at the people in your life, you'll disagree on what sports team to root for or what politician to vote for or what the best color for that wall is, you know, but those aren't the issues that typically define your best relationships, most important relationships. And you mentioned about changing someone's life or helping in a real way. You know, when Jeff told me he believed something was going on, he wanted to help me face that ghost, he made an investment in me that was voluntary. He didn't have to. When a friend of mine, Alan Lewis, he saw this ghost picture and said, you know what, we need to share that. And he gave it to Dale Kaczmarek, and that put the ghost picture out there a little bit. He didn't have to. He took a chance that that'd be a meaningful thing, you know. And Bill Edwards and Mark Atreides said, we're going to make a movie about this. They didn't have to. They took a step, and they decided to invest in something because it was a choice they made. And so, you know, on and on and on. It's just I think that like attracts like sometimes. Yep. That's another big favorite Tim Shaw expression that he'll use. He's like a big brother to me. And I think that happens. I think people look to be happy. And if you find somebody around you who makes you feel that way, that's a great thing. And we get caught up in our differences. It doesn't help anybody, really. I mean, sometimes you have to be stern. You have to draw the line when someone's hurting themselves through an addiction or poor choices. And sometimes you have to kind of shake them and say, hey, please wake up. But for the most part, I think you have to let people be who they are and hope that at the end of the day, when the big choices are made, they make the correct ones.
Let me ask you this. The name, the book, the film, Please Talk With Me, where'd that come from?
Good question. You know, I was a little frightened for most of these artistic pieces because it's a part of me out there, and having spent so many years hiding something, even when someone convinces you that it's a good idea to share it, you're still a bit worried that maybe because they're close to you, they don't actually know what will happen. Maybe they respect you so much as a friend, they don't see the negative things down the road, like the bubble people have sometimes. A lot of times, certain rock stars or politicians get a bubble around them, and no one questions them. You know, and just they keep moving forward in this void, this shared void, and. One of the things that was talked about when the film was being made was that in the end, that spirit seemed to be saying the whole time through the haunting, looking at it from like hindsight, talk to me, please, please talk to me so I can share something with you. And so that's where the concept of the name of the film, I believe, came from, and that it's about communication, because not only was the ghost calling me saying, talk to me, I went to Jeff and said, please talk to me. You know, and then the friends and Beth and everybody else and Craig, we begin to talk back and forth. And when you're in a moment of crisis, you need that. You need people to reach out and say, please talk to me. So it became this overriding, overarching theme that can be applied to so many things, and not just the film, you know. And I think it's pretty cool.
Chris, ridicule? I mean, were you worried going out there with not only the book and then the film? I mean, you're in a professional setting, and I know what it's like not to be a teacher, but I worked in corporate America for years, and that was always my big fear of, gosh, if they really knew, you know.
Right.
How did you handle that?
I wasn't afraid that the people that I trusted would do something wrong. I just didn't know if the people that saw the product would understand why it was being done. And so that was okay with me. The sci-fi TV show on the network, that was scary. Because in that moment, I'm putting myself in the hands of people I don't know. People who, for the most part, their job is to create a product that will sell. You know, and so when the primary motive goes from somebody who seems to really care about you and finds value in your story and wants to share the specifics of that or the meaning versus a group of people who their job is to create quality television at the expense of who knows what, that was more scary for me. And whereas the people in the film who talk with me would say, listen, where do you want to go with this? You know, how do you want to present this? I have no control over NBC or sci-fi, zero. You know, and so if my students watch a TV show or my parents or my friends that distorts what happened to me or paints me as a fool, you know, that could really have more impact on my reputation or who I am, my perception, anything I ever did in my life in, you know, 30, 40 years. So that was a scary thing. But I was, because I'm not a kid anymore and because I didn't need the exposure, I fought at the time, I think very admirably, pat myself on the back, to keep things in the sci-fi shows, the School Spirits one, as accurate as possible. In fact, you know, I tell people afterwards, there's just one thing I don't like. And I had to fight literally for hours to make sure I didn't say what they wanted me to say, you know. And the one thing in the show, if they watch the show, that they'll see that is not factual is when they had me say, I had two choices, to call my father or kill myself. But that's dramatic TV. It's drama, you know. Right. I would never kill myself, and here's why. If there's a dead thing in my room who might have even killed himself, last thing I want to do is be with him for 2,000 years by killing myself in the same darn place. You know, so that's the one thing where – but the rest of the show, I was very proud of it. Did a good job with that. But, you know, and that happens sometimes. And, you know, television and is just – it's really a quick-moving, fast-paced business. And I was very fortunate that they respected my request and they put out something I'm proud of as well.
Let's talk a little bit about TV. You know, the I am kind of center of the fence on the whole paranormal TV programming that I see, and I think it's great that it's out there and that we are making people aware of things, because I think it's opening up the whole paranormal field. But some of the stuff that I see, I really have to shake my head at. How do you feel about all that?
Well, it's one of those situations where I too can at times be critical. I try not to be critical in a public forum because I know that people are just doing their best. But, you know, we each have our own approach to life. And I don't want to be hypocritical. I don't want to judge somebody unless they're in their shoes. And I've talked to a few people now who've been in some pretty big, successful shows. And what they'll tell me is that it's tough because on one hand, they will experience some hauntings at certain places or castles or schools. They will. The problem is the shooting schedule doesn't allow them to stay behind for a few days and speak with this person and to try to assist them or do some research. And then conversely, when nothing is there, well, they can't do a TV show about nothing, then the people on the sidelines will make the bang noises or they'll do something to make a reaction and say, gee, what could that have been? And so the people on the more popular television shows who get renewed year after year, season after season, they have to walk that line where they say, okay, you know, not all of this is going to be accurate. And so part of me is going to take a hit that way because they're not going to see everything that's correct. On the other hand, what they usually rationalize is that it is spreading awareness to certain locations, certain types of phenomena, and the field itself. So I'll take the risk and I'll take the money. Some things will be correct. But in the greater good, if it works out that we spread the information in terms of the paranormal being something to look at safely or intelligently, we'll do it. Not everyone, though. Some people said they've stepped away from television because they weren't getting the gratification they need in helping the spirits. You know, so it's a fascinating thing, and I can be critical, too. The only thing I don't like is when the psychic or the people go in and start yelling and screaming. You know, I hear you. You're a coward. It's like, oh, my gosh. You know, because to me, my experience is that those spirits – we're part of somebody.
Right.
And that can be someone's mother or friend or son. And the last thing I want, I think it's appropriate to do, is to scream at somebody, especially in their own home. So I try to be open-minded and give everyone their due. But the one thing I don't like is when the ghost hunter extraordinaires start using, you know, foul language or, you know, getting angry and destroying things.
Let's talk about your life a little bit, Chris, because I can only imagine, and I would think that you have a fairly busy schedule without all this, but you're out there, you're doing events and traveling around. How does that cramp your style, or doesn't it?
I remember when I was running actively as a youth, I would run a Monday night track series in the summertime, a Wednesday night up the mountain and back series, a Friday night series around a lake. I'd run a 10K on Saturdays and a 15K on Sundays. And boy, was I tired. But at the same time, I was never bored. Life was exciting. There's always a challenge around the corner and some story to tell. And so, you know, I thought for sure, uh-oh, here we go, you know, Phenomenology and Parafest and Paracon and all these things. I'm not going to be able to handle this, but it's fun. And although you travel sometimes, you don't get enough sleep, it really is a joy to meet people and I guess, real honestly, have somebody say to you, I respect you and I like talking to you. And so that makes the grind actually a fun thing to do. And I'm sure, you know, once things die down a little bit and I go back to my quiet little life, I'll probably miss the hectic nature of you know, the paranormal stuff. And so I'm living it. I live every day and have a good time. You know, and if it lasts for 10 more days or 10 more years, I'm a happy camper, my friend.
Well, Chris, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but I don't see a quiet little life coming your way for a while. Maybe in the next life, man, but I think you're kind of stuck in this one.
I'll take that trade-off. I don't mind a quiet next life. It's fine.
So where's family fit into all this? I mean, are we all cool with Dad out doing this and Hubby out doing all this?
He used the great word cool. you know, my children, when they were small, like I think like most relationships with children and their parents, when they were small, I was like the hero. I was the strongest one. I could open the pickle jar, you know. I was the one that could put them on my shoulders and spin them around. I could tell them stories. So when kids are small, Dad's the coolest guy ever. He had some money now and then. We got ice cream. You know, it was great. As kids get older, children get older, they get more involved in their friends and their interests. And all of a sudden, mom and dad, they're kind of old. You know, they're kind of outdated and they don't quite look like they should anymore. And they're kind of controlling. And so there comes a time where it's like, hey, Dad, hey, Mom, that kind of thing. And you become less cool. But I've been able to go home again in a sense because I'll never forget it. My son was with his friend. And, you know, my son at the time was 17. That's the age where you know everything and nothing is cooler than what you're doing. And I was going shopping, and I got a cell phone call, and so I answered it. It was from home, and they're screaming, Dad, Dad, Dad. I'm like, what? Maybe there's a fire in the house, or the cat got hit by a car, something horrible. You know, he goes, you're on television. And then his friends go, Mr. D, you're on. So I became the coolest thing since sliced bread in my house for quite some time because Dad's on television. And so it's so funny how even people you know you can see every day, perspectives can change that way. So, yeah, I'm cool again, and that's a nice feeling. My wife, you know, it's something different for her. You know, you're right. It does take something away from the family for me when I'm doing these things, but she's very supportive. She's not into the events, but she's supportive. She's kind to me. She lets me go. You know, there's no leash or chain on me. She kisses me and says, go out and have a fun time. So I'm lucky in that regard, too. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. Guy, I'm telling you, it sounds to me like you got a, kind of the total package going on here. you know, with the exception of how you came into the paranormal, but here you are. Chris, what's in your future? I mean, is this something that you want to stay active in, or would you just assume the crowd dies down and you can go on your merry way back into your quiet little life?
When I think about that, I think about Star Trek, and I know it sounds odd, but when I was a little kid, I used to watch the original Star Trek series with James Doolin and DeForest Kelly and William Shatner, and I used to – and it's campy looking back, but at the time I thought, wow, look at these phasers they had, and look at Spock's ears, and boy, that Kirk show was brave. You know, but it didn't run for very long. It just ran for a couple of years and stopped. But it still became a classic. It still became something people talk about to this day. Then they made The Next Generation, and we had Picard, then they had, you know, what's it, Something Nine, and then this one. There became so many iterations of Star Trek. It kept going on. It was quality programming, but it didn't have quite the same appeal to me as the original did because it was groundbreaking. And so I understand that you can overstay your welcome. And I understand that, you know, people find value in what they find value in, whether I do or don't. And so what happens to me is largely the result of what people think about me. If I remain relevant in terms of what I talk to people or what I do, then there'll be opportunities for me to go out and still speak to people and do things. If for some reason my relevance dies down, there's no shame in saying I was for a while there a very positive force. You know, I was able to share a story and make people think about their lives and ask questions. So I'm not so concerned about the future because right now is so good. But if you're asking me what I'd like to do, me, I'd like to actually be able to create a film project. Cause, you know, Please Talk With Me dealt with my experiences. But because dealt with the experiences, it had to be true. They couldn't, like, change locations or change people. They had to be dead on in the facts and the images and everything. That was constraining for them, and it, for me, I think, a very glorious way. But what I'd like to do is, now that I've had this experience, create a film where I could put someone in my shoes generically, not me, but someone who was like me, and explain to people the goods and the bads about being noticed, going from nobody who gets pushed aside at the movie theater to someone who's shaking their hand saying, oh, please, good, nice to meet you, and how that affects people's lives. So I'd like to do a project like that in the near future where I can express to people what it's like to have a paradigm shift placed upon you and how someone goes about dealing with that.
Well, from everything I've seen, you've done a very good job of it. You really have, and you do it with class. And
well, thanks.
I have a question in the chat room. Do you go out and investigate or investigate in your own personal way?
After the ghost haunting in 85, for about 3 or 4 years after that, and as I tried to get a grip on what was going on, is it scientific, is it spiritual, what was happening, I did a few things where I would go to different like New Age shops and I'd talk about auras, or I'd go to someone's house, try to speak with someone who passed on. But by the time I got married, had kids, and got a career, I couldn't devote myself to that the way I needed to, and so I just stopped. With the advent of the TV and the movie and the book and things, people are now approaching me and saying, hey, listen, would you mind coming to my place and seeing if someone's there? You see ghosts, right? Would you mind trying to see if you can do something like this? And remember, when I did that years ago as almost a kid, I would say, tell you what, you make me a sandwich, I'll do it for you. Because I never believed in like trying to make a big buck of these things, you know. And if I could help somebody out and they gave me a sandwich, that was a good day for all of us. But just in the past, literally, again, your questions are amazing to me. In the past few weeks, I've been asked a couple times now to see if I can go to some house and talk to who's there and see if I can maybe get some information or maybe help them find some kind of peace or, you know, some calmness. So I'm just starting to once again step out very quietly, very timidly into the waters. And the reason I'm being careful about it, Craig, is because, you know, if I were to tell someone how to hit a baseball, they'd say, that's your theory. You know, if Derek Jeter did that, Derek Jeter, that's an expert. They'll take everything he says literally and to the heart. Now that I have this reputation to some degree as I'm not an expert, but an experienced person in the paranormal, people add more weight to what I say. So I have to be very careful not to say the wrong thing. You know, and if people are putting their hopes in me, or their faith in me, I have to do my very best to make sure what I can reveal to them or share with them is accurate, to the best of my knowledge. That's fair and truthful and honest. So I don't just jump in real quick and say, sure, I'll save the day. Sometimes maybe you can't. But I'm just starting to go back into the paranormal, you know, searching area again to see if I can maybe, you know, reconnect a bit and see if I can help out. I went to the Shanley Hotel this past summer. And they were giving tours of the hotel. And the Shanley Hotel is it's being restored. It's a great, beautiful Victorian-type mansion building in Napanock, New York, by Ellenville. And Sal Nicosia is a great guy. He runs the place. And they give tours because it's supposed to be haunted. And I said to him, look, I don't know anything. I don't want to go. I don't want to hear anything. I won this on a radio show. I didn't win the Madonna CD. I won the haunted hotel. Great. You know, so, but I didn't do anything. So later on, just on a whim, my friend Jeff, and this is the first time we were together doing this in 27 years, said, let's walk around the building by ourselves. And we're walking around into one area, and I saw a woman on the bed. I knew right away she was a spirit because I could see almost through her. And she was so sad and so annoyed. And so I asked her, what are you annoyed about? She said, well, there's a picture on the wall. It doesn't belong there. It's not me. They think it's not me. It doesn't belong there. I wish it was taken down. So about an hour later, everybody went back to the great room and started sharing their stories, what they saw, and they got the orbs and the pictures of this and that. And I was kind of quiet. At the end, I said, listen, this is going to sound silly, but there's a woman here who's upset about a certain picture. So Sal said, show me. And so we walked around the building, and I found the picture on the wall. And I said, that's the one. He goes, well, you know what? She's right. It doesn't belong there. That was just donated to the hotel last week by a lady on the street. She's absolutely right. And so, you know, there's some cool satisfaction in that for me, and that I can still hear things correctly. And at least that instance, I was able to relay information that made that spirit a little happier, at least in theory.
Chris, one of the things that I find interesting, and, you know, I've been psychic all my life, been doing professional readings for roughly 15 years, and, you know, this whole ghost thing kind of, I remember when I went over to Parax, and you had Tim and Marla and some of those people, and I was like, oh, man, I'm just like, oh, God, I'm like, what the hell?
No sure they're cold and for you, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, it's I don't know. It's like the light went off one day, and, you know, I sit around all day long talking to spirit guides and communicating with people on the phone, communicating with their guides, and it's like, wow, you know, come on. What really am I doing, and who am I to judge that?
Right.
But the one thing that I have found in this field, and kind of not necessarily in it, but from the sidelines, so to speak, is you get a lot of people that proclaim to be an expert at this, and I'm an expert, you know, at listening to EVPs, and I'm an expert at communicating with spirits, and blah, blah, blah. How do these people become experts?
That's a good question. You better be careful saying that. When you proclaim yourself as an expert in any field, that's when the pressure mounts. You know, if you appoint yourself as an expert, people can tear you down quickly. If people around you that you work with or help start saying they're good at that, that's different, because an experience then builds your reputation, and you can build on something that's honest rather than just some kind of frivolous, you know, advertising ploy. And that's something that I'm very aware of, you know. It's just the idea of quality people trying to do quality things. And you're right. I've met a couple of people, not very many, who are really trying to, you know, blow the whistles and bang the gongs and say, look at me. But for the most part, I've noticed that, you know, they most look at themselves, mm-hmm. you know. And you hope that, and I'm not being at all judgmental, but you hope that for their sake they realize, you know what, let's go back to why I'm here in the first place. It's to understand things around me, to help people out, and to share some good times.
Chris, what can we as individuals do to not only make this experience out there for people a little bit better than it is? And I'm not saying that the experience is bad, but I guess what I'm getting at is that sometimes I think there's a little bit more hype in it than there needs to be. Yeah. And with that, really start to understand and get some solid answers, because, hey, I'd like to know where I'm going when I leave my body.
Yeah. I think, well, what works for me the best in terms of making a difference to somebody, or this is my opinion, or in terms of having an impact on somebody, is listening to them. And a lot of times you'll have somebody who is very well known, and they'll shake a hand and push you along, shake a hand, push you along. And so you shake their hand, now you move on, and you have a picture with them. And that's okay. But, you know, when you go to a convention or a show and you meet somebody from just some small town, and they share their experience about when they were a child, or they might have heard their spouse say something, and you look in their eyes, you watch their hands move, you know, you watch their mouth, and you just listen, because what they're doing right then is they're telling you something that's valuable to them, something that's so important to them, and it's a brave thing to do. And I think that, you know, to really help someone to push things forward, you listen to them, and you think to yourself, okay, what are they saying to me, and how can I respond back in a way that meets in some way their need? I think that's so important. But I apply that also to education, also to spirits. You know, it's great if you can say, look, I've got a picture of a ghost, or I've got some kind of words on this tape, some EVP. But what does it mean? I mean, what does it mean when you cut and run? So I got this image and I'm out. See, I'll be back in 2 years and look again. And I think that the same thing holds true. If you can make that contact, listen. You know, listen, what are they saying? You know, why are they there? Do they want to find peace? Do they want to talk to somebody? Are they in pain? Or do they have some secret to share? And so I think you really push forward the whole paranormal realm, in a sense, the whole industry of meeting people and helping people by listening.
I completely agree. Chris, if there's somebody out there listening or somebody that hears this down the road and they're in a situation similar to something that you went through, what advice would you give them?
Well, first I'd apologize to them for being in that spot. Sorry, I couldn't get you out of it ahead of time. But what I would say is this. Have faith in yourself. Believe that you're good. Believe you can accomplish things. And have faith in the people around you. Not everyone is fortunate enough or lucky enough to make it through like I did. I had two great parents, and I had great friends in college. I had great coaches in running. Now you could say, well, I chose that. You know, I kept out of trouble, and I gravitated toward good people. You don't always know for sure if that's the case, right? But I allowed myself to share my experience honestly. And I was lucky enough, because I did that rather than holding it in, to survive the experience. I didn't know if I was going crazy. I don't know if I was able to make decisions at that point in time. But I knew enough to believe in the human spirit, to go to Jeff and say, Jeff, something's happening. Please help me. You know, please talk with me. Tell my dad, Dad, I'm in trouble. I need your help. You know, and as a teacher, I used to be a caseworker before that. When a student says to you, please help me. You know, and that's when the differences are made. You almost never recall, you know, what you watched on TV on a certain night in January of a certain year. You don't recall what you wore in a certain day in August of a certain year. But those moments, those high ups and those low downs, the emotional times are what impact you in a very, very strong way. And if you get a haircut and someone said, five people say good, or a person says yuck, the tendency is to say, what? I got my haircut. How come? And focus on the one negative. When probably the better thing to do is focus on the five positives and move from there. So I reached out to people. I was honest about my experience. I trusted in the human spirit, and it worked out very well for me.
Yeah, actually, it did, and I have to give you a high five on that, because a lot of people wouldn't do that. No. You know, and I've talked to a lot of people that have been through some tremendous things in life, and it's amazing how we can dig in and pull the positive when we don't think we can.
Well, you know, it's easier not to trust, and oftentimes it's safer not to trust. But if you're honest with yourself, there are some times where the U2 song says, you know, sometimes you can't make it on your own. Same thing. Sometimes, you know, we're a social species. We're not made to be by ourselves in a room 24/7. We're made to go out and talk and share and laugh. And, you know, and that's a more positive thing. And, you know, sometimes you don't get the result you want. I mean, almost half the marriages in our nation end in divorce. And to me, that's a real sad thing, only because, not because it's the wrong thing to do, get divorced, because it began with a promise or a hope. And you always want, as a human being, the promise to be fulfilled and the hope to be met, you know. But I tell people who've gone through different relationships, don't give up. You're a good person, and you will find somebody for you if just be honest with yourself. When you create a false persona, hey, you know, it's me, and I'm so cool. Well, you can't back that up sometimes. Just be yourself. And the right person who recognizes who you are will come into your life. And you know what? They may come in as a husband or wife, as a friend, as a coworker, as a neighbor down the street. But when you find them, just embrace them. You know, life is so short. You know, we say, well, they lived 80 years. But trust me, you know, I know people who are 80 years old. They tell me life goes awful fast. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what's promised to you. So, and I tell the kids in my school, eat well, sleep well. Make good friends and listen to music. And it sounds so silly, right? But in the end, that makes your life better.
I agree with you, man. I mean, we as a society have really missed out on some things these last 20 years. I hope we can get back to doing some things and moving forward and putting some of this stuff behind us. Chris, what's coming I mean, you got some outings. I remember a bunch of stuff you were throwing in chat here a couple of weeks ago. Where can people come meet you?
Well, my wife says no home address visits, so that's out. It's like ding dong. Uh-oh. I'm going to be at Phenomenology in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, in March 21st, 22nd, 23rd. That's going to be a fun thing. I'm really looking forward to something that's happening in April 26th, 27th at Fort William Henry, and that's the Paracon. And that's going to be a blast for me because I grew up not too far from there. And so it's always nice to learn about history in the area you grew up with. Mm-hmm. And those are my peeps, as they say up there. That's where, you know, you're going to see Tim there and Mara and Jeff and John and Kathy. And that's going to be great for me to be there. So I hope people go there and say hello to me there. I'll be at PowerFest in the fall. That's September, after Labor Day, weekend after Labor Day. And that's going to be for some reason, out of Pennsylvania, so I might have to go there someday and live there and save me on travel time. But I love these things. And for me, it's all fun. They're new situations. You know, I was telling a friend today in the car driving home from work, a year ago today, there was nothing like this. There was no film. There was no book. There was no movie. There were no show. Nothing had happened at that point to me except for a couple talks I'd given at local colleges. So my life has changed so much. And this is the first year I'm going full throttle, so I hope I do okay. I hope that I can keep the energy up, and I hope I can, you know, honor the people that are asking me to be there and speak on their behalf. I'm crossing my fingers, and I do my best.
That's all you can do. Chris, you have anything you want to throw out there before we wrap this up? I mean, it was a very quick 55 minutes, and I've done a lot of interviews. You're right in there on that wow meter.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate it.
Sure. I guess if I could just say one thing for about a minute, I would say this, because you know, you don't know what's gonna happen next to anyone. And in the past few weeks, four people I knew or know have lost someone they loved. And I've been going to a lot of funerals and wakes, and it's good to show support, and you always want to help people in a time of need. But it underscores something, and it underscores that, you know, and this sounds so cliche, and I'm sorry for saying it in the way I say it, but when you know someone and you love someone, hug them. Spend time with them. Even if they want to go shopping at some strange store or talk about some TV show or, you know, just a few minutes, just spend time with them. You know, because you don't know all the time who's watching you, who's listening to what impact you have, you know, but at least if you reach out and hug and just, you know, enjoy life a bit, I think it lifts everyone's spirits a little bit. People say, oh, hey, it's Chris. I'm not as good as anybody around me, hardly. I don't spell as well. I don't speak as well. But I just think people recognize I try to do good and I try to be happy, and I hope people out there are too. So just try to be happy, you know, enjoy your life. Look at the birds, look at the sun, look at, not direct at the sun's bare for your eyes, but you know, look at the people around you and just say, another day, here I go.
Yeah, and to throw a little bit extra in there, I mean, all we really have is today. We don't know about tomorrow. And like a lot of people out there, I have seen, you know, loved ones pass on, and early in life. So there are no guarantees. There is no guarantee that we're going to see 80 or even 60 for that matter.
Absolutely.
Chris, I have to say thank you very much. Awesome interview. I would like to have you back at some stage, and maybe we can talk about that when we get off the air here a little bit.
No problem. I had a blast. Thank you so much. I loved your questions. And anybody who's out in the chat room listening, thank you so much for taking the time. Yeah.